opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The Tenth Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The Tenth Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners. Welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The Tenth Voice. I'm Sandra Mead, your host, and I'm really excited to have Luke Harness joining me in the studio again today. Luke is going to be joining me as a co-host. Luke, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Awesome. We've got a really interesting show coming up today.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Yeah. Behind the board is our sound engineer for the day, Diana Anna. She's filling in for Linda Wilson this week. Diana, thank you very much for joining us and helping out.
You're welcome.
Always a pleasure. We have a great show lined up for today. For those transgender folks who transition to live full-time in their correct gender, many will be frustrated with their voice, including me. And I suppose that's even the case for some who don't necessarily transition full-time, but when they are out and about on the town would like to sound better. So this is kind of an important topic. It's especially hard for male-to-female transsexuals and transgender people. Hormones won't help feminize the voice, and voice surgery is very risky, very expensive, and not very effective, usually. So the most common option is voice modification, known as voice training, which can be difficult. For female-to-male transsexuals who take hormone therapy, the testosterone will usually make the voice deeper and help their voice match their identity. But there are also some who don't take testosterone, so the voice can be a challenge for them as well. Today we'll be talking with Kathy Perez. She's an internationally known speech pathologist who has extensive experience working with business leaders, professional singers, broadcasters, and others looking to improve or change their voices. Since 2000, she has focused her work on helping those of us in the transgender community discover our true voices. But first, we're going to chat with Una Nalling again. We talked to her last month, which was really a pleasure. Una is a researcher and writer who founded the informative website called Transist City. A lot of great information on that website. We talked with Una last month about the first six installments of her research into religion and transgender people, the intersectionality of religion and gay people in general, but certainly transgender people, is a very interesting and important topic for many people. So we're going to talk to her about a couple more installments that she's written and posted on her website. And, of course, we're going to round out the show with a community calendar update. But first, let's get started with a breakdown of some of the LGBT news this week, researched by Philip Hauser and a couple extras that I threw in there. And for questions during the show, if you want, you can call in 816-931-5534. I'm sorry, I know we have some international listeners today, and I do not have an international number for you. I'm sorry, but let's get started with the news. Starting out in Russia, Maxim Sergeyevich Martinskevich, the leader of the Russian anti-gay violence group Occupy Pedophilia, was sentenced Friday to 5 years in a Russian penal colony. He made international headlines last year when his group lectured LGBT youth and gay men with fake social media profiles and then posted video of their torment online, including beatings and coerced confessions of being pedophiles. After an international outcry, Martinskevich fled and was arrested in Cuba before being extradited back to Russia. Other members of the Occupy Pedophilia movement are scheduled to be tried by the court in September. In Washington, D.C., great news this week. The U.S. Department of Labor on Tuesday issued guidance clarifying that sex discrimination includes gender identity and transgender status of individuals who work for federal contractors and subcontractors. The news followed announcements last June by Labor Secretary Thomas Perez that the department was updating enforcement protocols and anti-discrimination guidance to clarify that full protections of federal non-discrimination laws enforced by the Labor Department extends to transgender individuals. This guidance is consistent with the EEOC's 2012 decision in Macy v. Holder, which found that discrimination based on an individual's gender identity is sex discrimination and constitutes a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1974. In Albany, New York, on Thursday, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo called on the state legislature to allow discrimination, to outlaw discrimination against transgender people. Look, I'm just going to allow you to speak for me today. How about that? Cuomo said that if he is elected to a second term this fall, he will push to outlaw discrimination based on a person's gender identity or expression when it comes to things like housing, employment, and public accommodations. The state already prohibits discrimination based on race, religion, disability, and gender. Legislation that would add gender identity and expression to the list has been passed by the New York State Assembly, but not the Senate. In Bristol Township, Pennsylvania, very sad news this week. A transgender teen was killed when an Amtrak train hit him Monday afternoon in what officials are ruling a suicide. Riley Matthew Moscatel of Croydon, Pennsylvania, was only 17 years old and preparing to start his senior year of high school. So I would like to simply say right now, if you have a pen and paper, please write this down. If you or a young person you know is LGBT and thinking about suicide, please call the Trevor Lifeline at 1-866-488-7386. For adults over 24, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. We want all of these beautiful souls to hang around with us. In Florida, a federal judge ruled Thursday that Florida's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional, but stayed his rule pending appeal, preventing the issuing of same-sex marriage licenses. Judge Robert Hinkle noted that the Supreme Court's ruling in Loving v. Virginia, which struck down laws banning interracial marriage, was also striking at the obvious racism behind those laws. He concluded that when observers look back 50 years from now, the arguments supporting Florida's ban on same-sex marriage, though just as sincerely held, will again seem an obvious pretext for discrimination. And moving on, the Supreme Court ruled Wednesday that Virginia will not have to begin issuing licenses to same-sex couples this week, staying a decision by the Fourth Circuit from earlier this summer. Chief Justice John Roberts, who considers stay requests for the Fourth Circuit, had referred the question to the entire court, who stayed the decision. And Alan Turing, some interesting news for Alan Turing this week. Britain's Queen Elizabeth II this week granted a royal pardon for internationally acclaimed British codebreaker and computer scientist Alan Turing, who took his own life in 1954 after being convicted of gross indecency for having consensual sex with a 19-year-old male, which was a crime at the time under British law. Turing's groundbreaking work, which helped defeat the Nazis in World War II, is considered a forerunner to modern computer science. And finally, in Cuba, interesting news out of Cuba for those of you that didn't hear about it. This week we found out that Mariela Castro, the daughter of President Raul Castro and niece of Fidel Castro, made history when she broke a revolutionary tradition by voting no in Parliament. Castro gave the thumbs down to a workers' rights bill that she felt didn't go far enough to prevent discrimination against people with HIV or with unconventional gender identities. Few in Cuba were even aware of the December 20th vote until after the measure was enacted into law this summer and came to light this week. Carlos Alzugaray, that's a hard one, sorry, a historian and former Cuban diplomat, said, "This is the first time, without a doubt, that anyone has cast a no vote in the 612-seat National Assembly, which meets only briefly twice a year and approves laws always by unanimous consent. Brava to her for making history by standing up for transgender rights in Cuba." And that's all we've got for the news today. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking to Una in just a second. And we're back in the studio with Una. For those of you that don't remember last week, Una is a happily married trans woman who likes to do research, a lot of research. She enjoys writing, and you can find many of her articles published on a very informative website called Transist City. a website that she founded in June of 2013. In her day job, she's a senior consultant with Black & Veatch's global energy business and is also an adjunct professor of mechanical engineering at UMKC. Today, we're going to be talking to Una again about the very interesting topic of transgender people and religion. We covered six of her articles, and she's written a couple more, and we wanted to touch base on those and see what else she has learned and can enlighten us with. So, Una, thank you very much for coming to see us again this month.
Thank you for having me, Sandra and Luke.
And thank you so much for, you know, always doing this research and posting all this informative stuff on your website. Everything that you post is always well-written, informative, and factual. And that's important because we all know that everything you find on the Internet is always quite factual.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons that I do the work I do, to try to cut through some of the misinformation and ignorance out there and just from a nonpartisan way present the facts.
Very good. Well, you published two additional articles. Briefly, I'm going to say the Bible and Transgender Persons, Part 7, Is Surgery a Sin? And then Part 8, Secrets of the Body and a Genderless Soul. Sounds very interesting. So tell us a little bit, is surgery a sin? Why did you look that one up? And tell us a little bit about what you found.
Well, the concept of whether or not surgery is a sin comes quite a bit from two sections in the Bible, really. One of them is the 1 Corinthians, where you have the Apostle Paul telling people that your body is a holy temple, and thus you should not profane your body by cutting upon it, by writing it, by doing things that would offend God. There is similar text within the Old Testament that is part of the Jewish foundation for being against tattoos and other body modifications. Essentially, these texts as written don't specifically outlaw anything except cutting of your body or putting words upon your body. But by extension, they could really be taken to mean virtually anything. They could be taken to mean any elective surgery, any cosmetic surgery. It could even be taken to mean life-saving surgery or I mean, I know there are extremists out there that have interpreted it to even mean you shall not put braces on children because you are modifying the body that God gave you through your child, essentially. And obviously, that's not very easy to work in practice. An incredibly large number of Americans have gone through some level of body modification. And then that comes to the question of, why is transsexual surgery a sin if all of these other surgeries, breast augmentation, liposuction, Botox, are not?
Very obvious question, right?
Yes, that is a very obvious question.
I guess the one question I've got real quick, Una, is, you know, you mentioned the Bible, but I know you do a lot of research as well in Islam and Buddhism and some others, but what could you find necessarily about surgery in Islam, for example? Because I think they do a lot of surgeries in Iran. I think we touched upon it last week, but kind of compare and contrast, what did you find there?
In most cases, and we have to remember, too, at looking at it from a primarily Christian society, we have a tendency to view Islam as one religion, when in fact it is a panoply of religions mixed with local and tribal beliefs. In many aspects of Islam, surgery is fully acceptable. There is a large field of cosmetic surgery, especially for women that must wear full Islamic dress and all they can show is their faces. You know, facelifts, lift augmentation, nose reduction, even permanent changes to the eyes and lines around the eyes are commonly done in those cultures. Iran, as I mentioned last month, is a special case where, due to a fatwa issued by the Ayatollah Khomeini, transgender people are allowed to live their lives provided they go through gender reassignment surgery. They are not allowed to not do that under his fatwa that was issued. I think it was in 1983.
Very interesting. We're going to pause for 1 minute and then we're going to come back. I know that Luke is burning to ask you a couple questions, but we're going to pause for just 1 second for a brief sponsor announcement. We've got sponsors out there that help KKFI stay on the air and certainly help the 10th Voice and Trans Talk come to you every week and every month. So we have a brief station announcement, and we'll be right back.
Support for KKFI provided by the KC Renaissance Festival 2014, August 30th through October 13th, including Labor Day and Columbus Day, right in Bonner Springs, Kansas. Featuring 7 themed weekends, 20 entertainment venues, live armored jousting, food, games, rides, and over 100 artisan booths. Directions, tickets, and additional details at kcrenfest.com.
Tune in Monday at 9 a.m. for Jaws of Justice Radio. State Representative Brandon Ellington and Winifred Varner Jameson are in to tell us what they saw and heard in Ferguson, Missouri. And Ron Hampton of the Black Police Association will critique the police response. That's Jaws of Justice Radio, Monday, 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
Okay, Una, I think this topic about is surgery a sin is really interesting because even in my own personal experience, I've had some people question my decision to have the chest reconstruction surgery myself. And I think it's really interesting that you bring up the point that in many religions, actually body modification is something to enhance a person's body. And so one question I would have is, how can people these days go so far away from what was said in the Bible through the interpretation that you're giving, and how, like you said earlier, how are tattoos okay, or other kinds of body modification like breast augmentation or liposuction, how can that be justified, like you said, rather, but with transsexual, but the surgery is not?
Yes, thank you, Luke. Well, it goes, the reason that people don't interpret the Bible in the way which I believe it was originally intended to be interpreted as is because they are taking it at face value. They are applying they're taking a text written in the case of the New Testament, the first and second century, and in the Old Testament as far back as, 12 centuries prior, and they're trying to apply it to the 21st century without taking the historical and religious and ethnic context of the time into place. It's like I had mentioned last month that some of the prohibitions against cross-dressing did not really apply. It didn't mean that there was a gigantic drag community running around, the Middle East at the time. It meant that they did not want you to participate in some of the cultic or pagan religions, as they called them, such as the cult of Kybele, where the priests did often dress as women and would sometimes self-castrate.
Oh, wow. So another question to follow up.
Did you just
that.
Say self-castrate?
Yes, they would self-castrate.
How could they do that and survive? I mean,
that's a good question.
Well, they would apply a tourniquet to stop blood loss, and in some cases, they would cauterize themselves with a hot iron. But yes, deaths did happen and secondary infections, because remember, this is 1900 years before the advent of penicillin. Any cut in your body was a roll of the dice, metaphorically speaking, whether or not you were going to survive it.
Oh, wow.
Fascinating, fascinating. Tell us a little bit about your second, or your eighth, let's call it what it is, the eighth series. And that says, Secrets of the Body and a Genderless Soul.
Right. Well, the first part of that really refers to Ecclesiastes 11, which is a Old Testament text, which basically says, it's interpreted to tell us, God is so far above us, and the human body is so mysterious and has so many things we cannot understand, that you should not seek to change your body. You should take what God has given you, because God knows much, much more about how you are supposed to be than you do. Now, amazingly, it seems to me that people would interpret that to mean, well, if God made me transgender, then not only should I accept that, but everyone else should accept that as well. But instead, people say, no, God only created male and female, no one else. Thus, if you say you're anything else, or you were born male but you're trying to live female, then I don't know, something funny is going on. You're trying to put God in a box. In reality, no, it's the people that are telling you how you feel and how God created you that you know is not how God created you. It's the critics that are trying to put God in a box so they can understand you. The second part, referring to a genderless soul basically refers to 3 Galatians 28, and it's short, so I'll quote it, where it said, "There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither bond, meaning slave, nor free, there is neither male nor female, for ye are all one in Christ Jesus." And essentially, this is taken to mean that by some that, well, it just means that when you get to heaven, you don't have to cross-dress anymore, because gender doesn't matter. But another way of looking at it is that our souls are actually genderless, and that these outer trappings, our body, our clothing, how we interact socially, shouldn't have that much meaning. What it's telling me is that it doesn't mean anything to God or Jesus whether you wear a suit or a dress to prom. What matters is what's in your heart and how your soul actually accepts Jesus and God into it, and that other people as well should not care how you dress, they should not care how you look, because you're all the same spiritual creature inside of yourselves.
Yeah, I always find it fascinating that certain people are arrogant enough, let me just use that word,
yes,
are proud enough that they can discern what God's plan was for you, rather than that relationship between you and your God.
Exactly. And once again, they're trying to put God in a box. Despite what the Bible is indicating in this phrase, they're saying, no, my interpretation is there's not going to be any drag shows. You know, there's no Missy B's Dirty Dorothy show in heaven. So just behave yourself and fit into the nice gender binary of male or female.
I wonder what these people would have to say when they say that it's only male or female and that's how God intended it in nature. What they say to the evidence of intersex people?
That you really come down into two categories. The first one is people that say intersex people only exist due to sin. Intersex people exist because humans are flawed and they've deviated from God's plan, and they've made these people, which some of these fundamentalists will go so far as to call monsters. Others will say that intersex people are a sign that Satan can sometimes influence us. If you have an intersex child, maybe they're XXY or something more profound. Obviously, the devil did it. Again, denying the fact that their own religion tells them God created you. God has a plan for each and every one of you. And compared to God's plan, the influence of whatever horrible sin your mother or father did, or even Satan running around wild creating intersex people here and there, she has no power compared to God. So again, they're putting God in a box.
Very, very interesting. Una, it's been enjoyable. We're going to have to wrap up because we've got Kathy waiting on the other line. But it's been enjoyable talking to you. It's always a pleasure. To be able to speak to people who are so knowledgeable and so articulate is always a pleasure. And, you know, to that, I must say, you were mentioning flaws. I'm quite proud of my flaws, and I'm quite proud of all of your flaws. So
me too.
I wear those flaws with pride.
Thank you, Sandra, and thank you, Luke.
I hope you'll come back on the show with us again sometime.
I would love to.
All right. We're going to take a music break. Diana's got something queued up. Diana, what are we going to be listening to here?
Some Kelly Hunt, who's a local artist. Her latest CD is called Beautiful Bones, and this is a song called Release and Be Free.
Outstanding. So. Stay tuned. We've got Kathy on the line. We'll be interviewing her shortly.
I believe. To lay it down, 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 and rise up. Lay it down and rise up, that I may walk a lighter path, yeah, and see a clearer way, and be a. Yeah.
And we're back in the studio here at KKFI. Kathy, are you there?
I am, Sandra. Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. So let me tell our listeners again a little bit about you. Kathy Perez is the founder and president of Exceptional Voice Incorporated. She's an internationally known speech pathologist who has extensive experience working with business leaders, professional singers, broadcasters, and others looking to improve or change their voices. Since 2000, she's focused her work on helping those of us in the transgender community discover our true voices. And I love that language, true voices. So, Kathy, thank you so much for being willing to join us here today on Trans Talk on KKFI.
Thank you for the invitation, and hello, Luke.
Hello.
So, Luke is joining us as a guest host today, and, you know, I'm hoping that maybe you can shed some light. We're going to talk a little bit more. I know that you work a lot with the trans female community, but I'm hoping you can shed a little bit of light on the trans male community, too. But first, let me ask you, Kathy, why did you become interested in speech pathology in the first place? I think it's so interesting. What led you in that direction? And then what influenced you to focus so much on helping the trans community years ago?
Thanks for the question, Sandra. The short story on that is many years ago in college, I envisioned myself being the lead singer in a rock and roll band. Yes. And I auditioned for a band. I don't know if you knew that. I auditioned for a band, and I totally bombed. I just humiliated myself, so I kind of crawled my embarrassing self back into the closet as a would-be singer. And then some years later, when I was looking for a continuing education, I wasn't quite happy with my role at the time as a teacher. I looked into speech therapy, and that looked like a good thing, a good adjunct to my educational experience. And then when I went to graduate school, about the second semester in, one of the classes that I had was with renowned Lorraine Ramig, a professor at CU Boulder, and she was so passionate about the voice that I literally had one of those moments that we sometimes have in life that is like, oh my goodness, this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, and that was 30 years ago.
Very good, very good.
Okay, Kathy, I see much of your training program focuses on creating a feminine voice for male-to-female ladies. However, there are some female-to-male guys who may not take testosterone for various reasons, including health or just personal reasons. Do you work with them, and how does the program differ to meet those different challenges for those guys?
Yeah, actually, that's a great question, Luke, and thank you for it. I'm going to answer that embedded in the second half of that first question, which is, how did I get involved in the transgender community? And honestly, it was never a thought in my mind. And one day, it was in January of 2000, the phone rang, and literally I picked it up, and it was a transsexual woman that lived in Boulder, where my office was at the time, and she asked me if I could help her with her voice. And I had not worked with any transgender people, and honestly never really even thought about it. And so she politely said, I will teach you about us, and I said, I will teach you about your voice. So because of that first call, it was a natural fit into the male-to-female transgender community. And then some years later, quite a number of years later, where my first transgender man came up to me after a workshop that I taught at Southern Comfort, and he said, I sat all through your workshop, and I assume you must know that I don't want to feminize my voice, but I don't really hear anybody, you know, helping us guys out with our voices, with masculinizing our voices. And so I began to learn about transgender men and their needs, and coincidentally, as things go in the world, one call led to the next call and led to the next call, and shortly I had a few trans men that I began working with. And not only is voice therapy important for trans men who don't take testosterone, but even for transgender men who do take testosterone, all that testosterone does is to lower the pitch. And as you both know, my method includes 9 different things that are trainable. So these fellows, some were on testosterone, some were not. Mostly they were. And what they said was, while I have a deeper pitch, I get read as a gay man. And while that may or may not have been a problem for some of them, most of them preferred romance with women, and they did not want to see themselves as being gay men or effeminate men. They wanted to see themselves as a strong man having romantic interest in a woman. And so then that's when I started working with transgender men and teaching them all of the other things beyond pitch.
So that's really interesting. I really hadn't thought about that very much, Kathy. Because I'm always impressed and kind of envious at the testosterone action for trans guys and how great their voice sounds, in my opinion, because it has masculinized quite a bit. And Luke, you know, I think, Luke, for example, your voice, I think, sounds great. It's really coming along. The tea has obviously had an effect. But, Luke, you know, I have to ask you, is there something about your voice? My voice bothers me. Is there something about your voice that still bothers you, or are you happy the way it's coming along? I'm just kind of curious.
That's a really good question. I mean, sometimes I listen to something that I recorded from, like, the eighth grade, and I am horrified, and I'm really happy with how my voice has come along. But then also at the same time, due to socialization, being socialized as female, I notice in professional settings or just being polite with strangers, my voice will naturally go up because I'm used to doing that. So sometimes I'll think, why did I raise my voice like that? I want to get used to lowering it when I'm in those kind of situations. So that is something that I want to work on.
So just a, kind of as a full disclosure to the audience out there, I do have a professional relationship with Kathy in that I am one of her clients. Just recently started. We've got some recorded sessions and whatnot. I really haven't had an opportunity to go through the practice very much, but I do want to make sure that I disclose that I do have a relationship with Kathy, and she's really wonderful to work with. But I know she's going to talk about, just in a little bit, that sort of thing that you just talked about there.
Let me actually jump in, if I may, because I love your voice, Luke. And
I would say,
you know, that robust 80-20 statistic. So I would say with my transgender women, female, transgender people, that about 80% of them probably need some kind of voice therapy or at least some kind of work with their voices, whether it's directly with a therapist or a singing coach or somebody, and 20% will figure it out on their own. I would say that statistic is about the opposite with transgender men. I would say that about 80% of the men that I talk to, and granted, I don't talk to everybody, but about 80% of the trans men that I talk to feel happy with their voices, with the testosterone of what they figure out about enculturating in masculine communication and movement styles, and about 20% of trans men find that feel the voices are thin or reedy or whiny. When they get excited, they sound girly, and not one trans man I talk to wants to sound girly. Or they, when they laugh, they use too much falsetto still. Mm-hmm. Or like you just said, Luke, and in a circumstance, they don't, it's really fascinating, actually. If I had to do it over again, I might be a sociologist, because I'm fascinated by communication and interactions with people. But most of my trans guys don't want to be, and pardon any cisgender men listening, but don't want to be that, like, alpha male, you know, slap each other on the butt in the locker room type of personality, where they want to maintain some of the warmth in their communication style. They want to maintain a sense of fairness. Most of them, I would say, identify as feminist, so they're strong pro-women and want women to still have a strong voice in their relationship, and don't do some of the interrupting, domineering communication things that cisgendered men do. Would you say that that's true for you?
Oh, definitely. I would definitely say that is true. I definitely identify as a feminist, and I definitely never want to overstep my boundaries, but I do know some cis men that do that almost all the time, and I definitely do not want to be like them.
You know, that's a whole other show, a whole sexism.
Yeah,
sexism. Any trans woman can tell you about the experience of sexism from one side of the table to when they're sitting on the other. It's amazing. Kathy, real quick, you mentioned nine elements a minute ago. I'm going to kind of read through them, and then I think it would be worthwhile for our listeners that we spend a little bit of time talking about each. So we're going to ask you some questions. But the nine elements that you teach to improving the voice are pitch, voice quality, loudness, resonance, articulation, phrasing, pacing, melodic intonation, and fluency. Let's start out with pitch and possibly voice quality. What can you tell us about pitch and voice quality and how those affect the overall impression of the voice?
There is a lot of information out there on YouTube and all over the place, and people that misunderstand what the tone of a voice means. And that's why I actually, in the system that I teach, because the people that come to me are the ones that couldn't figure it out on their own, so need a structure and a system. So the vocal tone, we could say, includes pitch, voice quality, loudness, and resonance. And that people would say collectively the tone. Generally speaking, most guys speak around 100 to about 150 hertz. That's the upper octave. So about 100 to about 150. So I couldn't go down to 100, and depending how long you've been on testosterone loop, I bet you can. And then most women, cisgendered women, speak about 200 to about 300 hertz. So that means that we want to get, whichever way we're going with the voice, we need to get people in the ballpark. So I always begin with pitch and have them identify with the feeling in their body. For the men, I try to have them feel the pitch in their chest. For the women, I try to have them feel their pitch in their head. Funny little image there. So the pitch simply means a note on a keyboard. It has to do scientifically with cycles per second, which is scientific. So the pitch of the voice does matter. I have lots of trans women say, well, there's lots of women, cisgendered women, that have deep voices. And then my quick comeback is, but yes, most of them, except for B. Arthur, most of them never get heard. So that's an important distinction. Voice quality simply means, is your voice scratchy or clear or breathy? One of the things that transgender women do to try to sound more feminine is to get very airy. And unless you're Marilyn Monroe, it doesn't really work. The most important, I guess, feature I would say with defining a voice that sounds natural is resonance. So the transgender men that come to work with me are the ones that still say their tone is reedy or thin or nasally or harsh, and they want to have a full, rich tone. And the way that we do that is for the men, we have to open up the space, and then most of the transgender women, in fact, 100% of women who are transgender women will have difficulty with resonance at some point in time. And that means that you, Luke, and you, Sandra, can both hit this pitch, which is A3, but Luke is going to sound like a guy hitting that pitch, and Sandra, you're going to sound like a woman hitting that pitch. And the difference between that is not just the pitch in what your vocal cords are doing, it's what's happening in your throat. So, Sandra, as you know, one of the things we work in your training is to get a brighter, lifted sound so that it's, I don't want to say thin, it's, I guess, bright is the word I use, so that you don't sound masculine. And for my guys, I get them to open up so they don't sound feminine.
I must say, one quick comment. You made note of the airiness, that trans women kind of just like to sound a little airier. And so the one takeaway from your comment, Kathy, I've got is that I can make the airiness work for me if I can just look a little bit more like Marilyn Monroe.
I think that's right, yes. Big boobs and blonde hair.
Exactly. Luke, do you have another question?
Yeah, I mean, all of these are so connected together, so it's hard to try and block them out and define them that way. But I'd be really interested in talking about articulation, because sometimes I have issue with that when I try to speak too quickly and I don't articulate everything that I'm trying to say because I'm speaking too quickly. So I know that would definitely help sometimes in getting, you know, going too speedy in speaking, and my voice will naturally go up instead of down where I want it to. So what can you say about that with articulation?
Articulation, most of these have been well studied in the communication field, not so much in the speech pathology field, which is where I come from, but in the speech communication field, gender communication has been reasonably well studied. If we think about articulation as consonants and vowels, and I break it down like this because, again, I'm creating a method because the folks that come to me are the ones that weren't successful on their own, and I need to help them to understand how they're training these different components, and then how we put it back together. The gender communication studies would suggest that, generally speaking, men tend to mumble, and women tend to speak more articulately. So I never advise my trans guys to mumble because it's not really very effective. But I would say the articulation piece of that is that if we focus on the feeling of the movement in our mouth, chances are pretty good that we're going to bring our sound to that next level and sound clear. If we overemphasize it, we might sound like an effeminate man, and if you are, that's fine. But if you're not, then you don't want to overemphasize that. Think of an effeminate gay man. For my transgender women, many of them come from science and engineering backgrounds, and that group tends to be mumblers. So we focus a lot on being very precise with the articulation, but not so much so that it sounds effeminate. It's so fascinating, really, because it's a fine line between what's enough and what's too much and what's too little. So those are my thoughts on articulation.
All right. Thank you so much. We're just going to take a quick break here for a station sponsor announcement, and then we'll get back to this interview with Kathy Perez.
Funding for KKFI provided by Gaia Goddess Gathering, a festival for all women held September 18th through the 21st at Gaia Retreat Center. This year's featured goddess is Isis and our theme is Mother of Nature and Magic. For more information, GaiaGoddessGathering.com, and you can find us on Facebook at Gaia Goddess Gathering.
Raging Grannies on Wings, Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
And we're back in the studio. Kathy, I think the other four elements that we haven't really touched on yet are phrasing, pacing, melodic intonation, and fluency. So I'm not sure how best to group those together. I'm just going to ask you, kind of how do those fit together?
Great question. I call those the naturalizing elements. So let's say, for example, Luke, since you and I don't know each other, let's say you're not happy with your voice, and by the way, you should be. You have a great voice. I wouldn't do a thing. You sound excellent. But let's say you weren't, and we were to start working on your tone. We'd make sure that you feel very solid with your pitch down to those numbers between 100 and 150, and then we would make sure that you were having a full, robust, resonant tone so that it conveys that masculinity. Would make sure that you weren't over-articulating. So then we would say, how do we make that more natural sounding? Because with my trans guys, one of the things they can tend to still do is to upswing. Mm-hmm. So, for example, they might do questioning behaviors like, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to go down Eastern I-70, then we're going to take exit, 450, and then we're going to take a left. And most cisgendered men would not do that. So then we would focus on melodic intonation, and we would practice first off, shortening the phrases, slowing the tempo, going down in inflection, and making sure there was just a little bit of a staccato rhythm to it. If we think in our collective American consciousness speakers that we know in common, let's take Barack Obama. So Barack Obama is, when he speaks extemporaneously, he speaks in a very hyper-masculine way. Since he's confident with his masculinity, and that he is very staccato, and you'll hear comedians make fun of that staccato style of speaking. Then when he speaks from a written script, he's very fluent, he's very preacher-like actually, and his fluency then is conveying a powerful emotional message to us. What we want, what you would want, Luke, if you were my client, is a balance between a little bit of a clip, because too much fluency ends up sounding too soft. And it's that balance between strong, robust, yet not losing the warmth of your communication style that you want. So with my gal, it would be somewhat the opposite. I want to increase their length of phrase. Most of my trends in the women have a hard time being descriptive, oddly, so that if I say, take me through the steps next time you go shopping. Oh, I went into Nordstrom's and I bought a gray skirt. And I'm like, no. We have to describe the color of the skirt, the texture of the skirt, how it made you feel. Transgender women at first don't use feeling words. They don't use a lot of color words. Many cisgendered women speak very much in lots of descriptions. We would get more of a melodic swing. Here's an interesting fact. Most men, cisgendered men, will inflect when they speak between 5 and 8 semitones. And semitone is just simply a white key to a black key on a piano. Cisgendered women will speak about 15 to 20 semitones. That's a big difference. So when you, so if you were my, all my clients, So if we were to work on melodic intonation, I would really have you feel like you're going up in falsetto and then coming down. Going up to say it's a really nice day and then coming down. So that you're experiencing a depth and a height to your inflection that you might not have done before. And then with my transgender women, I'm certain that I'm going to teach them fluency, how to smoothly flow things together so it sounds warm and sweet. I often use physical analogies here, so secret how the shape of a cisgendered woman is. We have round bottom and round front. And so I tell people to think about speaking in your round bottom, round fronted self. And it's no secret that men are stronger across the shoulders and chest than women and more narrow at the hips, and we want to have their robustness be in their chest and shoulders. And with women, we want our sense of movement being in our hips. So I incorporate body movements and feelings and thought processes to naturalize the voice with those particular elements.
Wow, all of that sounds so great. It's so interesting. And I love your analogies that you use, the physical analogies. And
the one before you ask her the next question, I had another thought come to mind. You know, she's talking about our bodies, and think about how we're, you know, talking with our bodies. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I want to go there, because I don't think, having internalizing the view of yourself as having a SpongeBob SquarePants body isn't going to help very much. So go ahead.
At least it's very kind. SpongeBob is very kind. But after all that, the wonderful explanations of these things, and just, you know, feeling so encouraged to have those things help with how our voices sound, what are the primary impediments that customers face to improving their voice when they start working with you, and how can they be successful?
No, somebody emails me or calls me up, and I get pretty much calls or emails every day. I have honestly the cut and paste that I send out. And one of the things that I ask is, tell me a little bit about you, where you are in your transition. And then I immediately find out who are the cross-transfers, who are people in a transition, pre, post, peri, transition. Because one of the things that I've observed over the now 14 years of doing this is, if you're smack dab in the middle of a transition, that may not be the time to start your voice therapy, because you've got other money expenses, job concerns, hormones that are going to be all over the place, a spouse or a partner that may potentially be having some challenges with your transgenderism, parents that might be having troubles with you, your children might be disowning you. So that amount of stress that goes into any human spirit when they're making a transition, which is enormous. And by the way, some of my friends out in the world, well, not anybody that knows me now, but when I meet new people, or a new client, for example, comes in my office who has nothing to do with transgenderism, but they've seen my website, they say, you know, I'm curious about that. You know, I just don't understand. Like, tell me a little bit about that. One of my questions, or one of my statements, is, I have never in my life seen a group of people that ultimately face their biggest fear and then kind of do it publicly. And I'll say that to somebody, can you imagine, what is your biggest fear? And they may or may not say it, but they might think it. Now imagine that you fully disclose that to your world and wonder if people are going to still love and accept you for who you really are. And that fact alone has just motivated me to become an ally and an advocate for this community, because I've seen the tears, the triumphs. I've unfortunately had to hear about the suicides in my community that hurts me so hard. And so that's what makes me like this bulldog ally for this community, because I hear your pain and suffering, and then I also laugh with your successes. So one of the biggest impediments is, where are you in the transition? If you're right smack dab and things are falling apart, wait till you've got some heart and soul space and some head space to even think about this stuff. So sometimes I actually have people that begin working with me after they've been full-time. I've got a gal right now in Denver. She's been full-time now, I think she's had 4 years, and she has quite a deep voice. And she said she didn't start working on her voice because she just never really thought that she could be different. And she was afraid. She was afraid of sounding funny. And then I, in a hopefully loving way, but in a bit of a tough love way, and I said, well, let's think about that sentence for just a moment. You don't think it sounds funny to look as attractive a female as you are and have a very white voice? And she paused and said, hey, touche. So I said, it would be a little bit better to have a female voice that was a little bit funny sounding because it was a work in progress, then maybe to still keep speaking with your deep, deep voice. And so she's doing it. So where somebody is in their transition is one of the biggest impediments to their success. Motor learning theory, one of my areas of expertise, says that time spent in training is one of the most significant markers for success. The amount of time that people can put into their training is going to, of course, determine their success on the outside. What you put in is what you get out of it. You can't become an expert skier by going on a mountain once a year. You can become an expert skier by being regulated. And I try to chunk it down. That's why I have the apps and other things that I do, and I chunk it down so that people can spend 5 minutes or 10 minutes a couple times a day instead of feeling like they have to spend an hour. And honestly, I'd like to spend an hour working out a day, but I also can't find that time. So I would say those things are the biggest ones.
That's a great segue into the next question that I've got for you, Kathy. I know that, you know, given the different constraints people have, whether it be time or something else, there's different tools, different products, I think, that you've put together over the years or that you recommend to, you know, help people get past these challenges and help them be able to move forward at a pace that is working for them in their lives. So we've only got a couple minutes left, but tell us a little bit about, you know, what sort of products, what sort of recommendations you have for people to be successful, to overcome these challenges. And then for people who want more information, let us know about your website or how they can reach out and find out more information.
Mm-hmm. Actually, to find out what I do and all of my services and products, the best thing to do is to Google my name, Kathy Perez, and it's K-A-T-H-E. And then you find all the stuff that I do. But my website, my main website is exceptionalvoice.com. When I first started doing this 14 years ago, I had already some very good clinical experience with how to train a voice. And what I knew was I had to chunk it down into where are you in your process. Like Luke, for example, if we were to work together, you're an advanced student already because you've done so well with what you have. So then I had to find out who are the beginners, who are the intermediate students, and who are the advanced students. And I've created tools around that. The mobile app we put together, because it is a series of lessons for only $5, that helps somebody to get started on something. We start with pitch, we start with breathing, we start with posture. We have 5 lessons available for the ladies and 2 for the fellows, and exceptionalvoice.com gets you there. But then I also created some other programs, and I help people to understand how is it that you should be training these particular elements relative to your skill set. Again, I guess I'm an intermediate skier. So if I wanted to get better at skiing, my skiing coach wouldn't necessarily have to coach me as a beginner. He or she would take me to that place. And so that's one of the most important things. For somebody to determine, where are you? Are you pretty good? Do you have a vocal routine? Do you understand some of the elements of the voice? Have you had some success with your voice? If the answer is yes, then start somewhere at an advanced level. And I've got some products for that. If you've never done anything, and some people say, oh my gosh, I can't carry a tune in a bucket, and I'll say, don't worry about it. You'll get there. Just own your beginner status. The other thing that I have people do is to go to my YouTube channel. I put a lot of free things on there because I really am an advocate, and I get this is an expensive process. And that's why the app's only $5 a lesson.
And Kathy, we're gonna have to wrap up. Real quick, where's your YouTube channel?
If you just go to YouTube and put in my name, Kathy Perez, you'll find it.
Okay, very good. We're going to have to wrap up, unfortunately, Kathy. Thank you so much for coming on to talk with us.
Thank you, Sandra. Thank you, Luke.
That's awesome. Hopefully you'll come back on and talk to us again some point in the future.
Thank you so kindly.
Thank you. Have a great day. All right,
bye-bye.
Listeners, we're going to be going over the community calendar here for the local Kansas City LGBT community, so let's go ahead and get started with that. Now, first of all, on October 26th at the Like Me Lighthouse Tuesday night at the movies, they're going to be showing The Big Gay Musical. That's at 7 p.m. on August 26th, and that's a genre comedy. And the film follows a brief period in the lives of 2 young actors, one who's openly gay and the one who is closeted to the parents. The openly gay actor struggles with whether he should be sexually promiscuous, and the closeted one wonders if he should come out to his conservative parents. You're UMKC alumni, so what's going on there at UMKC?
Yeah, over at UMKC on August 28th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. is going to be an ice cream social. It's the annual Welcome Week event hosted by the UMKC LGBTQIA Programs and Services. And it's at the University Walkway, which is located between the UMKC Atterbury Student Success Center and the Miller-Nichols Library. It allows new and current UMKC students the opportunity to engage with members of the UMKC and Kansas City LGBTQIA community, as well enjoy some free ice cream and slushies from Kona Ice. You can stop by the Like Me Lighthouse booth to learn about the groups and resources found at the Like Me Lighthouse. And I'm sad that I don't get ice cream that day.
I know. Didn't you say there was another, I think, thing
yes.
coming up as well? Right?
At UMKC as well, on Thursday, September 4th from 6 to 8 p.m., we're having our first Trans Plus Allies group. It's going to be an introduction that night, and anybody is welcome to come. It's at the UMKC Student Union, room 302.
And that's a good one to know about, given the focus of today's show, Trans Talk. So that's for trans youth and allies as well, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, and it's open to everybody.
Okay, what time is that again?
It's on Thursday, September 4th from 6 to 8 p.m.
And is there an age limit?
No.
No? Okay.
No, and we encourage families and everybody to come.
Okay, very good. And then just to let everybody know, the Like Me Lighthouse is a very important institution here in Kansas City for the LGBT community. They do so much. I want to let everybody know that they do take time off once in a while, so you can expect them to be closed on Labor Day weekend from August 29th through September 1st. And the last thing that we've got on our calendar that we've got time for today is September 12th and 13th, Latino Gay Pride is coming up, and that's going to be at Hyde Park from 3 to 9 p.m. And, Luke, from what I understand, I haven't been to it personally, but I understand the Latino Gay Pride has grown every single year. So I think that's a very important celebration every year as well.
Wow, yeah, that's awesome.
So that's it. That's all we've got time for the community calendar today. I want to thank everybody, all the listeners, again, for tuning in to the 10th Voice. And thank you so much for tuning in to today's show, Trans Talk. Many thanks to our special guests today, Unan Alling, who is on again, and Kathy Perez to talk to us all about our voices. And, of course, thanks to Luke Harness for stepping in and helping with the hosting duties today. And many, many thanks to our sound engineer, Diana. Thank you, Diana.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And be sure to tune into the 10th Voice every Saturday as we bring you stories and interviews of interest to the LGBTQ community. You can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the10thvoice@gmail.com. Next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman, hosted by Sharon Lockhart and Amy Bell. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I believe God has made me the way that he's made me. It's taken me 35 years to come to terms with that.
Vicki, God has the power to help you to overcome your homosexual inclinations. You have adopted the thinking of the world.
Like science, you mean.
Well, you gotta move that.
The more visible bank robber is 27-year-old John Wojtkiewicz, an out-of-work New York City resident and an admitted homosexual.
The dog's real issue was the line, Attica, Attica, because he never said it, and it's the most famous line from Dog Day Afternoon.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Dozens are busted in an anti-gay crackdown in Lebanon. Newly out Christian singer Beeching rocks the Bible.